What up, fishes? I'm Mark Walsh, director of Party Source Rex, and you're listening to the Pixar Podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
You can't rush art.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh at
me. It's because you're a clown!
Stranger from the outside.
Greeting.
You're not the queen. You don't smell like the queen.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
How do you feel?
Oh, I feel swell. In fact, I think I feel a song coming on.
Hey, good evening. How are you? How are you? Nice to see you. Hey, it's great to be here in your room. Where are you from?
Hello there, Pixar fans. Welcome to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. I'm Derek Clements. I'm here with Greg Mariotti. Hello, Greg.
Hey, good evening, I should say.
Good evening, and yeah, the show notes for this episode are available at, here it is, folks, thepixarpodcast.com/100. We are doing it. Greg, congratulations. We're hitting 100 episodes today.
Derek, congratulations. This is really exciting, and I think we got a great show today, and I'm super excited to talk about it. We got a lot of listener contributions as well.
Yeah, we sure did. And we've been preparing for this episode for a long time. It was really fun to put together. And so the way it'll work, folks, we have a topic for today. We'll get to some a couple news items first, and then we'll move into today's featured celebration. And I think it'll be a perfect way to celebrate 100 episodes. But yeah, I've been feeling really nostalgic lately, Greg, thinking about we're getting to this milestone. I'm remembering the first episodes of the podcast that I produced. I was sitting in my closet in my bedroom in my apartment and had my little microphone on an upside down laundry basket, and now I'm on a seat at a desk with a slightly better microphone, still in a bedroom, but we've come so far.
Well, you've come so far. I remember those early episodes as well, and I think I reached out to you pretty early on to congratulate you, and I think they're just getting better and better.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited that when you joined the show, I feel like it really improved the quality, and it really is cool to think how far we've come. I really appreciate all the listener help throughout the years and the great comments and the iTunes ratings and stuff. It's been really, really fun. And when I go back and listen to those early episodes, it does feel a little different. I feel like we've become a little more professional. Well, I've been to Pixar twice since we've started that, so that's kind of cool, and that's helped.
Definitely. what was the date of the first show, Derek?
So the first one was July, I believe it was 13th, 2011. So it was about a month after, not quite a month after Toy Story 3. When I saw Toy Story 3, I wasn't even thinking about doing a podcast, but it was sort of somewhere in my subconscious, and then it just exploded, and we've had a great almost couple of years.
Well, that's pretty cool, because I mean, if you look at I know that there's been gaps, but if you look at pure content, it's pretty much an episode a week for the last 2 years.
Yeah, there have been some gaps, but yeah, it's been a lot of episodes, and I feel like I've learned a lot, and I'll just keep going, and it'll be exciting. And you know, with the topic we have for today, Greg, with the way that we're going to celebrate, it's actually going to be pretty fun, because we're going to be able to hear some voices from people that have come on the podcast in the past, some past guests, some listeners, and I think it'll be a retrospective not only of the podcast but of Pixar and of our lives and our deep psyches. So it's going to be wonderful.
Let's do this.
All right. Well, before we reveal the listeners already know, but if they've been following the Facebook and stuff, but let's quickly, because we want to really go through this here before we get to our main event. What are some news items we want to talk about? What are some things that have been happening in the last few weeks with Pixar news? We know that Monsters University is coming out in the next month or so, in about a month. But what are some of the big news stories that have caught your eye the last few weeks, Greg?
Well, we had some pretty big, but a very not specific news today from Pixar on future yes. release dates. So we've got four more feature film dates that have been released through 2018, but no movies really tied with those, although there's been speculation that at least one will be a sequel. I don't think that's anything right. new in terms of you and I have been kind of talking that way for a while, but we know there'll be basically a movie June 2016, June 2017, November 2017, and June 2018. I do find it interesting that there's the 2 a year philosophy is definitely looks like to be an every other year thing.
Yeah, so 2015, well, I guess catching up to that point, Monsters U, June 2013, Good Dinosaur, May 2014, Inside Out, June 2015, and then Finding Dory, November 2015. And so, yeah, 2 a year in 2015, 1 a year, or one in 2016, and then two again in 2017. So it is interesting, and like you said, we don't know what these films are going to be. The announced films that that don't have dates yet. We have Lee Unkrich's Dia de los Muertos film. We know that there's a Teddy Newton project coming up somewhere that with Derek Connolly, writer of Safety Not Guaranteed. We know that's somewhere. And then it was announced at least Mark Andrews announced that he's working on something as well. So maybe some of those are some of those dates and something else. I don't know. Maybe the next. Who's a big director? What's a big director that we don't have? Andrew Stanton's got a film. Pete Docter's got a film. I mean, Brad Bird doesn't have one, but he seems pretty busy. So I can't imagine at least one of these is from him.
I could potentially see Mark Walsh having a film.
Okay. Yeah, that's
a possibility. You know, uh-huh. 4 or 5 years down the road, since we are talking about 2018.
Right.
So he's somebody that I think we should keep an eye on. And like you said, there could be somebody that kind of pops out of nowhere the way, like a Dan Scanlon did.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in a way, Mark Andrews too, he just had worked on shorts and stuff before taking over Brave. So it very exciting announcement from Pixar, and really, it'll be even more exciting when we see some names and some films, or at least if we don't have the titles, the untitled Pixar blank project. I want to see the untitled. That could be a Twitter meme or something, that like the untitled Pixar blank project, and listeners fill in the blank. Maybe we should encourage that. Hashtag, I don't know. Coming up at the top of my head. Hashtag something, something. I don't know. All right. Fill in the blank. All right. Anyway, the other thing I want to talk about, Greg, was along the lines of Brad Bird. Brad, I thought this was interesting. Slash Film, Jermaine Lucier, a friend of the podcast, Jermaine Lucier, had an article about Brad Bird and his upcoming film with Damon Lindelof, Tomorrowland. And in that article, he mentioned that Brad Bird admitted to the fact that he was offered Star Wars 7. He was offered. The quote here is, "I've known Kathy Kennedy for a while, and I know George Lucas. They did come to me," Brad Bird says. "But the problem was the schedule they had in mind made it impossible to do unless I dropped Tomorrowland. And I was just really deeply into this film at that point. It's easy to say, just put it on hold. But you're moving now. You don't know if you're going to be able to move later. Maybe it's true of filmmakers like Cameron or Spielberg, but I have to act on momentum. I love the Star Wars films, and I can't wait to see what JJ does, but it meant I'd have to shut down one dream to participate in another. I feel like with Tomorrowland, we're making something that's really special and unique." So, you know, I think it's pretty remarkable that Brad Bird would turn down Star Wars for anything. And I have to say that made me even more excited to see what this Tomorrowland is going to be all about.
Yeah, I do too. And I think anytime you talk about a big picture, a big franchise, a tentpole, whatever you want to call it, his name is going to be in the conversation now. And yeah, you know, whether it's Star Trek 3 or Star Wars 7 or whatever else is coming down, the latest superhero movie, I think that his name will always be in the mix. And I think he put himself on the map with Mission Impossible, and you know, depending on how Tomorrowland does, you know, I think ultimately he still wants to make his Earthquake movie. So I guess we shall see. And he also talked about, obviously, The Incredibles 2 a little bit in that interview, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so he admitted to he's been thinking about it. It's something he really, I mean, this whole thing with The Incredibles 2, from Brad Bird's quotes over the years, has just been, if there's a great story that we find and we can get, you know, like the original team, we can make it better than the first one, then we'll go ahead with it. But it's been pretty slow. And I have to say, Greg, I really liked your speculation a few weeks ago that possibly Teddy, I could see if it's going to be someone other than Brad Bird, Teddy Newton taking over an incredible sequel would be pretty amazing, pretty fun. I think.
I think it would be great. And I just, with Brad's comments, he says he's been thinking about it and
right.
making sure all the elements, what could make them work together, which tells me that maybe it's not as far along as we would have hoped, which maybe makes the Teddy Newton thing not a reality. But I envision this 1950s era incredible sequel with Teddy Newton sensibility kind of tying together just that retro thing. I think it would be pretty awesome.
No, it would be pretty great. And you're right. The quote definitely made it seem like the idea is not already happening, leading to the idea that Teddy Newton's working on something original, which would also be pretty great. I'm excited to see whatever hatches out of his mind. He is quite quite a talented man.
For sure.
I guess, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I don't know if since this is right up your alley, if you wanted to talk a little bit about the Monsters U soundtrack details that came out. I don't know if that was on your agenda or not.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. So I'm a huge music fan, film music, one of my favorite things. And we did get an announcement of the track listings from Monsters U. And I didn't read the track listings because that's what I always do when Pixar films come out. I don't want to be spoiled. And then I was like, wait, I've already seen this movie. I can actually look at the track names. And when the soundtrack comes out, I can actually download it and listen to it right then. It was sort of an exciting realization for me. But it looks great, the soundtrack. And having seen the film, the music was a highlight for me. Randy Newman did some great stuff mixing original themes and old themes from the first Monsters film. So I'm really excited to listen to the soundtrack again. And then there's also a song. It's like, it's not, it's, I guess maybe this could be a potential spoiler. Not really, but I won't say any details about it other than to say it's very different. It's not the type of song that would be compared to the song from Monsters, Inc. It's not a Randy Newman song. But it's pretty fun too.
Now that's the single that's coming out early next week.
Yeah. Oh, good point. Yeah. When is that? It is. I noticed it was releasing early, but I didn't get the exact date.
Yeah. June 4th is, it's a digital single. It's got some remixes and, it'll be a CD and an iTunes release.
Cool. Yeah. So that will be something you can pick up. And it really isn't a spoiler to it, but if you're like me, I didn't want to see anything before those things came out. And so, cool. Yeah. Well, and then, okay. One more thing I want to talk about, Greg, before we jump into, the episode this week, when we were talking about Tomorrowland and Damon Lindelof, I have to update you on something. And that a few weeks ago, I mentioned that I hadn't seen Lost. Well, in the hiatus, as I've been putting together the 100th episode and getting things ready for New York that I'm about to go to and all this stuff, I realized that there was nothing more important I could do than watch all 6 seasons of Lost in a period of about 2 weeks. So I did it.
That's kind of crazy, and I'm envious of you. And I know some people don't like the way that show ended. I'm not one of them. I actually, believe it or not, first of all, what'd you think of this series, especially watching it so compressed like that?
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And it's sort of like, it was sort of painful because I didn't necessarily want to, like, for example, stay up until 6 in the morning like I did a couple times. But like those episodes, you can't just watch one. I mean, it's so hard. If you have them available like on Netflix or something, it's so hard to not go on to the next episode. So I was a really big fan of the series. And I wonder if my perception of the ending was colored by the fact that I already knew that the reaction was that people didn't like that not all the questions were answered neatly and everything. And so I was really prepared for that, which I don't know if that affected the way I liked it or I liked the ending, but I really did. I liked a lot what Damon Lindelof did. And in the process of doing some like research about it, I discovered, you may have mentioned this on a past podcast, Greg, but the Lost podcast is amazing. Damon Lindelof, Carlton Cuse, the writers of the show have like commentary for every single episode starting in season 2. That's pretty remarkable.
It's so good, and they're so funny and self-effacing, and it just imagine watching one episode and then waiting a whole week. And then the only thing you've got to satiate you between episodes is that podcast. And so
yes.
That's kind of how I watched the show. And so I would just soak up as many podcasts as I could, and everyone was speculating. And I think a lot of times that's a lot of fun for the show. And at other times it hurts the show because people set their expectations too high, or they have grander ideas on how a mystery or a plot's going to be resolved. But I'm in the minority with you that I love this show, and I got to admit I saw the finale in Los Angeles in a theater with like 2,000 people and with like members of the cast and crew of the show.
Oh no so way!
It was really cool. They had back then there was a podcast called Jay and Jack, and they had put together a finale show in LA, and they had Michael Emerson there, and they had a couple other folks and contests, and it was just really cool to watch the episode with all these fans. And so everyone was ooing and aahing the episode, and that was very unique, a unique way to watch it. So, I mean, that
obviously
affected my viewing as well.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's really cool. No, it's great stuff. And Damon Lindelof, I just love, I love him as a writer. And I think part of it is how open he is, how willing he is to talk about his thought process behind certain decisions, and to admit when he thinks he actually made a wrong decision in the writing or in the execution of something. I just think that's such a fresh, there's something so fresh and remarkable about a writer, especially of these big, you know, mythological heavy type sci-fi stuff. When you have a writer like Damon Lindelof who's willing to talk about it with fans, it makes me respect the work that much more. I mean, I already respect the work for the work's sake, but I love him as a writer and the way he interacts with people. So this is the Pixar podcast, of course, but I think, you know, I'm excited to see what Lindelof is doing with Brad Bird, that collaboration. I mean, this is now one of my new favorite writers with one of my favorite writers of a long time and director Brad Bird. So I'm just very excited to see what's going to come of that. And really, really, again, don't understand all the hate on Damon Lindelof, except that he opens himself up to it. You know, by engaging with fans, he opens himself up to the darts. And so maybe that's why there's more hate heaped on him than other writers. But I love him. I think he's a great writer. I can't see what he does next.
I'm totally with you.
All right, Greg. Well, should we get into the main event now? It's the Pixar podcast. It's the 100th episode. Are you ready?
I am ready.
I am ready too. All right. So here's what we're doing, listeners. So today for the 100th episode, we are going to look back at kind of hopefully why we are sitting here talking about Pixar, why Greg started the site, PixarTalk.com, why I started the podcast. You know, ultimately, it's not just because we like talking about this sort of stuff in general. It's a lot of it has to do with Pixar has made some great films over the years, to put it lightly. And so, you know, Greg and I both love Pixar films. And so we thought it'd be fun to kind of focus not just on our favorite films for this episode, but look back at our favorite Pixar moments, the favorite scenes from Pixar films that sort of capture. I'm actually excited to hear. I don't know what, Greg, your scenes that you've chosen are, and I'm excited to kind of hear what your criteria were. This is, of course, our second attempt at being the film spotting podcast, which you and I are both fans of. A long time ago, toward the beginning, I think the first year, the first Christmas of the show, we did that top five Christmas gifts. And we were heavily inspired in the format by the Film Spotting that does their top five whatever of every week. And so this week we're each going to say our top five Pixar scenes, and I'm going to intersperse clips from those scenes throughout the episode today. And also we heard some great clips from you listeners responded to the invitation to send in your favorite scenes. And like I said, some of the people that we're going to hear from are listeners to the show that we've never heard of, that we never heard from yet before. But we also have some past guests that will be fun to hear from. Maybe even a past co-host possibly might crop up in this episode, and very excitingly, also a couple Pixarians themselves will be chipping in. So we're going to hear from a lot of people today about scenes from Pixar films that meant a lot, that mean a lot, and I guess that's kind of one way to describe it. But I'm curious, Greg, how did you go about picking your list?
Wow, I really just sat down and just thought about what scenes make me happy or what scenes make me laugh or what scenes really inspired me. And I just sort of went that direction. I kind of did limit it. I guess unconsciously, I kind of limited mine to feature films, but yeah. It was really easy. I've just felt like they kind of just came up really quickly in my head, and I was able to rank them really quickly. I didn't have a lot of Sophie's Choice choices to make. And so, I got my five quickly, and I have a few honorable mentions, but I think they kind of run the gamut of emotion and humor and just inspiration.
Cool. Yeah. I didn't have really a lot of specific criteria either. I just kind of did a similar approach of what films came to mind. Unfortunately, it didn't take me long to realize how miserable I was making myself by doing this, because I came up with 24 scenes that I wanted to put in my top five.
Wow.
So you know, that's kind of a shame. And so then when I finally did limit it to five, I ended up crossing off a bunch at the end. I thought a lot about what Pixar people always say about their films, that you don't ever finish a film. I didn't finish my list. I'm just having to release it now. And maybe in a few days it's going to change. But I do really love these five films, and I'll try not to give too many honorable mentions, because this is a top five, not a top 24, but I do have 24 scenes on here. So let's go with the top five. So let's go ahead and start, and I'll go ahead and start. My number five film or scene goes back, and this is a little bit of a mix of nostalgia and just a scene that I've always really loved, and that is from Finding Nemo, the jellyfish scene.
Ow.
It doesn't look bad. You're going to be fine. But now we know, don't we?
Yeah.
That we don't want to touch these again. Let's be thankful this time it was just a little one. Don't move. This is bad, Dory.
Hey, watch this. Boing, boing.
Dory!
Boing, boing, you can't catch me.
Don't
boing,
bounce on the tops. They will not sting you.
Boing.
The tops don't sting you. That's it.
Two in a row. Beat that.
Dory. All right, listen to me. I have an idea. A game.
A game.
A game.
A game.
Yes.
I love games. Pick me.
All right, here's the game. Whoever can hop the fastest out of these jellyfish wins.
Okay.
Rules,
okay.
Rules.
Okay.
You can't touch the tentacles. Only the tops.
Something about tentacles. Got it. On your mark, get set.
No, wait. Not something about them. It's all about them.
Whee!
Wait. Dory.
Gotta go faster if you want to win.
Dory.
Boing. Boing, 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 boing.
Wait a minute. Dory.
Whee!
So we're cheating death now. That's what we're doing. We're having fun at the same time. I can do this. Just be careful.
Yeah, careful I don't make you cry when I win.
No, I don't think so.
Give it up, old man. You can't fight evolution. I was built for speed.
The question is, Dory, are you hungry?
Hungry?
Yeah, because you're about to eat my bubbles. The clownfish is the winner.
Woohoo!
We did it. Look at us. Dory? Oh, no.
And what I love about this scene is it kind of combines three of the main things that I love to see in Pixar films, and generally speaking, Pixar films deliver on all three of these things really well, but this scene really sums it up, and one of them is the visuals. This scene has just some beautiful, beautiful visuals, as you see Marlin and Dory swimming through this maze of more and more jellyfish. It has a lot of excitement and danger, this scene. And it also has a lot of emotion. It's a very very high stakes, to do another film spotting term, I guess. Emotionally, you're very emotionally invested in what's happening, and there's a lot of like trust issues happening at once, and there's all these things at play. And then the other thing about it that I always love is the music. It's one of my favorite music cues. Thomas Newman's great stuff. So that's my number five, the jellyfish scene from Finding Nemo.
It's a great choice, and it's got so much, like you said, so much going on, and you've got highs and lows and great art direction and color and music, and it is a great choice.
Yep. So what is your number five, Greg?
My number five, I thought I would start off with my favorite funny scene from a Pixar movie. So
nice.
For me, it's, and it kind of ties into what's happening in the next month. It's Monsters, Inc., and it's the scene where Sully is fainting over and over again when he thinks that Boo's been turned into a box of trash as they're running around the monsters scare floor and in the back rooms. And I just love it. I feel like it's such a throwback to Looney Tunes, and just, you know, it's very physical, and just his facial expression and the music. I just love it. It really gets to me every time I see it.
Yeah, that's a great scene. I remember the audio commentary of that scene talking about the inspiration from Looney Tunes and some classic cartoons from that one. It definitely does have a classic cartoony sort of feel, that scene.
Definitely. What's your number four?
All right, so my number four is a little more recent, and it comes from Toy Story 3. And I don't know if this counts as a scene because it's really long. It's more like a chunk of the movie, but it's the prison escape sequence from Toy Story 3. And I love this scene because I think it's hilarious. The thing that I like, and the thing that I think it exemplifies of Pixar too, is the just the ingenuity and the willingness to not just stop when a joke is funny or when something is working, but just to keep pushing it and keep pushing it and keep pushing it. Because that scene, that sequence really is very long. And I don't even know, I'm sure you could go in and count how many steps this master plan to escape Sunnyside daycare. I don't know how many steps is involved, but it's like a lot. And just every few seconds, something else happens, whether it's Mr. Potato Head removing his body parts and sneaking him out and going inside the tortilla. I mean, that's a funny, hilarious scene. And just so many things are crammed into that one segment. And of course, great inspiration from other films like prison escape films, Great Escape, all this stuff. So that's one of my just most enjoyable. I can watch that sequence over and over and over again and just enjoy it again and again as much as the first time, just because there's so much in it to watch.
Oh, I agree. And so well edited, too. And I'm sure it was a lot of work to put that whole sequence together, but it really, really, really works.
Yep. All right. So, no overlap so far, I think. Is that right, Greg?
We're off to a good start. Listening to some of our listeners, it just reminded me how many amazing choices there are out there.
Hey, Pixar Podcast. This is Johnny Slagle calling in. I miss talking with you guys, especially talking about Pixar and all things animated. My favorite scene is probably from Up, when the old man finally reaches the part on top of the water waterfall, and he realizes that all these physical and material things that he has really isn't going to bring back his wife and don't mean as much to him as the friendship and the accompaniment of his new companions. And I just think it's really kind of a gut-wrenching moment, because I still get kind of sad when he's dumping all that stuff out, because, you know, everybody likes storing things because it has meaning behind it, but I just think it's a very powerful moment that he's willing to sacrifice these things that mean so much to him for the new things in life.
Russell!
I'm gonna help Kevin, even if you won't!
No, Russell, no!
Thank you. Hi there. This is Clint and Lynette Hamblin, the owners of the Up House in Harriman, Utah.
Hi there.
We're here to say what our favorite Pixar scene is. For me, my favorite scene is when Carl goes outside after realizing that Ellie had left him a message at the end of the adventure book, and he wants to make things right with Russell, and Russell's leaving to go get Kevin, and so Carl wants to try to chase after him in the house, so he decides to throw all of his material belongings outside and begin his new adventure, essentially. I just love that part because he has that significant life event and learning moment that I think everyone needs to have at certain points in their life, and constantly be learning and paying attention to what's going on around them and their loved ones around them. And I just love that part. I think it's a great message, and I love his passion at that point on to the end of the movie.
And I love the point when Carl and Russell and Kevin are escaping the dogs and they're approaching the gorge, and Carl decides to grab Doug. And at that point, he decides that Doug is his, and it's before he actually calls him his master, that he is his master. And I just think that it's awesome that he has chosen him at that point. And I just think that it's awesome. It always makes me go, aww. So I love it.
Hello, Derek. Congrats on 100 episodes of the Pixar podcast. That is phenomenal. My name is Colin Levy, and I am a camera and staging artist at Pixar. And as you can imagine, I was a Pixar fan long before I was a Pixar employee. My favorite Pixar movie is Monsters, Inc., so I feel like I should pick a scene from that movie. But, you know, not easy. I love the door vault sequence. I love the banishment kind of moment. But I feel like the scene that I treasure most is when Sully goes in to say goodbye to Boo for the last time. And he's welling up a little bit. And I just feel like it's such a tender, emotional, sweet, you know, scene that makes me cry every time. I think, you know, I've seen the movie dozens of times, and I think there's one time I didn't cry, and it pissed me off. from that moment all the way until the very last frame before the cut to black, I'm just a mess. Definitely of all the Pixar moments, that's the one that holds the most kind of emotional, like, meaning to me. So that's my favorite scene. Congrats again, and hopefully you'll make it to 200. See ya.
Kitty has to go.
My number four is something I've mentioned on the podcast before, and it's a scene from The Incredibles. And it's the scene when Dash is being chased by, what do you call the little guys in the UFO cars or whatever?
Yeah.
But they're running through the jungle and on the island, and it's really that whole sequence. But for me, the one moment that really sticks out is the moment that he kind of realizes that he can run on top of the water, and just the joy in his face and the music, and I just love it. It's just such a inspiring scene for me, and I just get kind of goosebumps every time I see it.
Oh my gosh, Greg, I am so glad that you chose that scene. Looking at my list now, I had to look at it because that was on it, but then when I was typing it up, I forgot to put it on. So I'm glad that I forgot, because it meant I could cram in another one, and since you mentioned it, we're able to talk about it. But that is a wonderful scene. And I remember, again, on the commentary track for Brad Bird talking about how some action sequences you don't really need to write in the script. You can just work it out in the storyboards. You kind of know that you're going to get from one... Something's going to happen, and kind of the ending sequence of that big finale of The Incredibles was a scene like that, where you didn't really need to write the script exactly what was going to happen, but there are some action sequences that are kind of story-wise very significant and have these very precise moments that need to happen. And he mentioned that scene was one of those scenes that he really had to plan out and write. And maybe that is part of why it feels so fresh. But for me, it's Michael Giacchino's score in that sequence. And it's this, you know, it's pretty typical, pretty exciting, you know, not typical, but great, you know, normal, exciting music. And then that moment when Dash realizes that he can run on the water, the score just changes into that just delicious score, that delicious theme. That scene gives me chills. Yeah, great choice.
The rest of the Pixar podcast community. My name is Heather. I live in Oakland, California, and my very, very, very favorite Pixar movie, although a lot of people would consider it not that great, or probably even the worst Pixar movie, is A Bug's Life. I have watched it so many times that I could probably do a one-woman show, except that, you know, Disney would sue my butt off if I tried. I watched it a lot as I babysat my little brother, and it's just, okay, I'm a sucker for the little guy fighting the man. It's a trope, and every movie, okay, not every movie, there's a few, but so many movies have done it, but I'm sorry. Oh, as soon as Flick says, you're wrong, Hopper, you know that he's gonna bring down the smackdown. Hopper is not going to get out of this without some serious, serious butt-whooping.
Ants are not meant to serve grasshoppers.
I've seen these ants do great things, and year after year, they somehow manage to pick enough food for themselves and you. So who's the weaker species?
So who is the weaker species?
Ants don't serve grasshoppers. It's you who need us. We're a lot stronger than you say we are. And you know it, don't you? And, oh, that speech. And, you know, what is Hopper going to say to that? Nothing. He just got owned by an ant. And so, of course, his reaction is violence, because once you've been owned, you know, fight or flight, and he's going to fight, he's a grasshopper. And then just, oh, that mass of ants coming towards him. Oh, isn't it lovely?
You ants, stay back! This was such a bad idea.
I love it. I love it so much. Bug's Life. Come on, people. It's really, really an awesome movie. And then at the end, they do the bloopers, and you're like, wait, how do you do bloopers of something that is completely computer animated? Oh my goodness, these people are geniuses. That's A Bug's Life. It is my favorite movie. And you all can be haters, but, you know, you all want to be Flick. You all have a man you want to fight against, and you know what? That's the awesome part of it. So that's my favorite movie. Thanks for letting me share this. Have a beautiful day.
Hi, Derek. This is Jay from New Jersey. I wanted to answer your latest blog post on the favorite Pixar scene. It would have to be from Toy Story 3. Towards the end, when all the toys are together and the big, I call it the big fire pit, It just said something about that scene, all holding hands, and the looks on their faces just gets me. I get a tear in my eye every time I see it. And I've got two small children. They're 4 years old, and they want to watch Toy Story all the time, and specifically this movie. So every time I've seen it, every time it gets me. So that would have to be one of my top scenes of any of the movies I've seen. All right, keep up the great work, and I will keep on listening. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ivan Guerrero, phoning in from Manila. I think it'd be next impossible for me to select just one favorite scene from a Pixar movie. I'm a big fan of Up, I'm a big fan of WALL-E, and I think those films are just filled with some of the most beautifully choreographed sequences in the history of film. Just really, you know, potent, make you cry, make you laugh out loud moments. Now that said, if there's one thing that I love just as much as a good Pixar movie, it's a good Muppet movie. I'm a tremendous fan of the Muppets, the same way I know many of the folks at Pixar are. And in fact, I've heard stories about how the Muppets have kind of influenced a couple of Pixar movies, from Monsters, Inc. to Up. So my favorite moment, and it's really, I kind of built it up a little bit too much, it's more of an Easter egg in a Pixar movie, is a shot where we kind of realize that Pixar characters coexist in the same world as the Muppets. In the short film Presto, which is a hilarious little short film, there's this little blink or miss split second where you see Statler and Waldorf, the two old guys from the Muppet Show, looking down from the balcony onto the stage. And it's just such a little tiny detail, you probably won't even see it. But when you do see it, you can't unsee it. I remember the first time I saw it, and I just had it freeze frame on my Blu-ray, and I just stared at it for a good, I don't know, 2 minutes. I was just totally amazed that this could happen. That it was sort of a geeky Roger Rabbit moment, you know, when you realize that these two universes actually coexist in the same world, even if it's just a couple of frames.
All right, what's your number three?
All right, well, my number three harkens back to my favorite film of all time, and that is Toy Story 2. And so this scene is really nostalgic for me. I think part of what I love about it is that every time I see it, I think back to when I was in the theater. I think I was 12 or 13 years old watching this film, and it was really one of the first times that I remember being just completely lost in the story of a film, and seeing how I don't remember what was first. I remember Back to the Future was another film for me that was, I was just so engrossed in what was all the twists of the plot. And this scene is one of the big sort of complications that happens to the plot in Toy Story 2. When first you have Buzz Lightyear meeting himself, the new version of himself, and that's really amusing, really, really funny, and a nice exploration of like toys, what you can do with toys that really you didn't see in the first film. And then he's meeting, talking to the other Buzz, but the other Buzz is, like the Buzz was in the first film, kind of clueless and stuff, and very Star Commandy, and so he ends up like tying up our Buzz and putting him in a box, and we pan out and we see all of just a whole row of Buzz Lightyear toys, and our Buzz is just like screaming to get out.
And this is the Buzz Lightyear aisle. Back in 1995, short-sighted retailers did not order enough dolls to meet demand.
Hey, Buzz!
Halt, who goes there? Quit clowning around and get in the car!
Buzz, Buzz, I know how to defeat Zurg!
You do? Come on, I'll tell you on the way!
No, no, guys!
You've got the wrong Buzz! You've got
the wrong Buzz!
Say, where'd you get the cool belt, Buzz?
Well, slotted pig, they're a standard issue.
And then it cuts right from that to Woody being, like, pretty much packaged up or like, spruced up and photos taken of him to go off to the museum. So you have Woody going to Japan. You have Buzz in some random store in a box that no one is going to find. And it was just one of those moments when I knew that it was all going to work out in the end, but I had absolutely no idea how. And that was just such a fun feeling to be just completely taken in, no idea how it was going to work out. It's one of my favorite scenes of a Pixar film.
Nice. And I think Toy Story 2 is going to come up quite a bit tonight. So that's a good choice, Derek.
All right. Well, before we go on to your next one, Greg, let's do a clip. Some of these clips I'm going to kind of just put in at different times, but this one I want to lead up to. So this clip is another Pixarian. We heard from one Pixarian already, but this one is from Scott Clark, and it's not his favorite scene from just as a fan, but it's the favorite scene. It's a scene that he worked on, and I thought that was really cool that he called in to talk about what it was like to animate a film.
Hi, Derek. It's Scott Clark, supervising animator here at Pixar, and most recently working on Monsters University. It was great talking to you the other day. So you're doing this What's My Favorite Scene, and I thought I would talk about my favorite scene that I got to animate. It was definitely Doug's introduction to Carl and Up. And the reason? I love dogs. Dogs are amazing. Just caricaturing how distracted they can be and funny they can be was really fun.
Hey, that one looks like a turtle. Look at that one. That one looks like a dog. Oh, it is a dog.
What?
We're not allowed to have dogs in my apartment. Hey, I like dogs.
We have your dog.
Whoa.
Wonder who he belongs to.
Sit, boy. Hey, look, he's trained. Shake. Uh-huh. Speak.
Hi there.
Did that dog just say hi there?
Oh, yes.
Brah!
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you. My master made me this collar. He is a good and smart master, and he made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel! My master is good and smart.
It's not possible.
Oh, it is, because my master is smart.
Cool. What do these do, boy?
Hey, would you throw that cradle contigo? I use that collar. Watashiwa hanashima. To talk with, I would be happy if you stopped.
Russell, don't touch that. It could be radioactive or something.
And a little story about that scene. When I was animating it, my wife was pregnant, and we were doing a remodel and living in a small apartment in Oakland. And my dog, Jackson, was constantly taunted by the squirrel out back. The squirrel would actually be up on the fence looking down at him. And this scene, of course, was written in the boards before we lived here. But I was actually looking at Jackson. Whenever he ran out, he would just freeze and just be looking at that squirrel. I even have pictures of it. But anyway, that was my favorite scene to animate, because I identified with it, and I think as a human, we all get distracted by our own squirrels in life, and that's what made it funny to me. So take care. Good luck with the rest of your podcast. Bye.
So, Greg, we saw Scott when we were at Pixar. And,
yes. Supervising animator, right? Is he the supervising animator on Monsters U?
Yes, he is the supervising animator on Monsters University. And so he was taking us through some scenes that he animated. So what did you think of his presentation?
Oh, I thought it was great. And I loved his comments and just the passion. And again, I can't wait to see the final footage of the scene we got to see at Pixar. So super excited for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So listeners, you're going to hear more from Scott in a future episode from audio taken from that presentation. So you'll be able to hear that after you see the film. I'm going to release it a little while later, but so you can kind of have the context for what he's talking about. But I thought it was really cool that he called in. And it was also great to hear from Colin Levy. Just really excited, really happy that they called in. I thought that was really cool. So I'm glad that I could share that with you.
Hi, this is Samad Rizvi. I run the Pixar Times and I live in New York. My favorite Pixar scene would probably have to be, I'm going to cheat a little bit here. It would have to be the end of Toy Story 3. Even though I was a little bit older than where Andy was, I really feel like I connected with the end of the movie. You know, I grew up with the first Toy Story. I was about 10 years old when that came out. And then Toy Story 2 a few years later. So it felt like the story of that, you know, my life story evolved along with it. And just seeing, you know, Andy growing up and have to, you know, this message of letting go and moving on, it really connected with me. And it was something that that I really enjoyed seeing on screen and I thought was very emotional. So that would probably be my favorite Pixar scene / part of a movie.
All right, Greg, what is your next scene?
Well, you mentioned Toy Story 2, and actually, you've mentioned Toy Story 3 as well already.
So, yes, I have.
I'm going to mention Toy Story 3 as well here at my number 3. Right. And it's you know, you can go a bunch of different ways with this, but for me, the scene that really gets to me is the scene when Andy hands his toys over one by one to Bonnie and sort of talks to Bonnie about each toy and what that toy means to him, and just so emotional, so well done, and just something that just, as Film Spotting likes to say, it gets really dusty in the room every time I see that scene.
Absolutely. Oh man, that's a great choice. That's I think that's one of those scenes that's going to go down in history. You know, it's as one of the great animated scenes. It's actually not on my list. Spoiler alert.
My cowboy.
Woody? What's he doing in there?
There's a snake in my boot.
In my boot. Now, Woody, he's been my pal for as long as I can remember. He's brave, like a cowboy should be, and kind and smart. But the thing that makes Woody special is he'll never give up on you. Ever. He'll be there for you, no matter what. You think you can take care of him for me? Okay, then.
Hi, my name's Liz Vasquez, and I'm calling from Columbus, Ohio. I just wanted to leave my message about my favorite Pixar scene and why. My absolute favorite out of all of these wonderful movies is the scene Define Dancing from WALL-E. My husband and I had gone to see the midnight showing the day that WALL-E opened, and as much as I love the entire movie, that scene between the beauty of them dancing in space, the obvious joy and love that two robots had for each other, and every time I watch it, I still get a little bit choked up because it's that beautiful. Just wanted to thank you guys. Think that you have an amazing podcast, and I look forward to hearing the next one. Thanks. Bye.
All right. So, are we at number two now?
Number two.
Yeah. All right. So, my number two. Now, I feel bad about saying this because I have a feeling this scene, or at least this film, I know is going to be high up for you, Greg. But my number two scene does come from WALL-E. And it is the scene, the Define Dancing sequence. And again, it has all those things that I love. It has great story points happening in the scene. It's beautifully animated. It's gorgeously animated, and it has great music. Thomas Newman. It's actually a Thomas Newman and Peter Gabriel collaboration. That theme, but beautiful music on that track.
Which lively dancing would take place.
On Earth is amazing! These are called farms. Humans would put seeds in the ground, pour water on them, and they grow food like pizza.
Good night, Captain.
Computer. Define dancing.
Dancing. A series of movements involving two partners where speed and rhythm match harmoniously with music.
So I don't know. I'm bracing myself. Did I steal something from you, Greg?
I think we're okay.
I think we're okay. All right. Well, cool. So we'll keep going. What is your number two?
Well, I think that my number two comes from Ratatouille, and I think that friend of the show and slash film writer Jermaine Lucier probably says it better than me, so let's hear a clip from him.
All right.
Hey, Derek. This is Jermaine Lucier. I write for slashfilm.com. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California, and I just had to call about my favorite Pixar scene. One scene popped in my head immediately, and once I picked it, I was like, well, there's so many other good ones, but I'll just stick with that first one. And it's when Anton Ego eats the Ratatouille at the end of Ratatouille. I mean, Brad Bird at that point had already made such an awesome movie with so many great moments. But when the camera zooms in and he becomes a child, and it was the perfect visual way to represent nostalgia. And it just brought all of us into the movie, too. And that was Pixar for me, where it's the perfect blend of visuals and music and emotion and nostalgia, all in animated form. And that is definitely my favorite Pixar scene of all time. I hope all is well, man. Talk to you soon.
Ratatouille? They must be joking.
Thank you.
So yes, Germaine chose Anton Ego's flashback at the end of Ratatouille after tasting Remy's Ratatouille, and that for me really, really works and is my favorite scene in Ratatouille and one of my favorite Pixar scenes of all time. So that is why I chose that at number two.
Oh, I love that scene too. That was one of my honorable mentions. Again, as somebody that does get really nostalgic, they captured something there that was so so powerful. That feeling of just going back to your childhood and having it all suddenly come upon you. Really good stuff. Great choice.
Yeah, it just so to me that it was just so surprising. I just wasn't ready for it the first time I saw it, and it just really it surprised me and wowed me. And like I said, just emotionally, such a great scene, and so yep. Brad Bird.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, totally.
Hi, this is Josh Weber calling from Provo, Utah. My favorite Pixar film is The Incredibles, and my favorite part of that, or favorite quote, is the scene with Bob and Helen as they're arguing after he returns home one night pretty late from saving a building of people that was coming down. Helen is trying to get a very important point across to Bob that even though he really enjoys reliving the days of their past that were great, he is missing out on the most important event of his life at that time, which is his family. And I remember when I saw it for the first time, I didn't really quite grasp that, but going back years later and watching it again, I came to see how there have been moments in my own life where I kind of needed to wake up call and to remember to not try and relive days of my past that may seem enjoyable at the time, but to focus on what's most important in the present. And more often than not, that the most important part is my family. So that's why I love it. Thanks.
I thought you'd be back by 11.
I said I'd be back later.
I assumed you'd be back later. If you came back at all, you'd be back later.
Well, I'm back.
Okay.
Is this rubble?
It was just a little workout. Just stay loose.
You know how I feel about that, Bob. Darn you, we can't blow cover again.
The building was coming down anyway.
What? You knocked down a building?
It was on fire, structurally unsound. It was coming down anyway.
Tell me you haven't been listening to the police scanner again.
Look, I performed a public service. You act like that's a bad thing.
It is a bad thing, Bob. Uprooting our family again so you can relive the glory days is a very bad thing.
Reliving the glory days is better than acting like they didn't happen.
Yes, they happened. But this, our family, is what's happening now, Bob. And you are missing this. I can't believe you don't want to go to your own son's graduation.
It's not a graduation. He is moving from the fourth grade to the fifth grade.
It's a ceremony.
It's psychotic. They keep creating new ways to celebrate mediocrity, but if someone is genuinely exceptional,
then
this is
not about you, Bob. This is about Dash.
You want to do something for Dash? Then let him actually compete. Let him go out for sports.
I will not be made the enemy here. You know why we can't do that.
Because it'd be great.
This is not about you!
What's going on?
Don't know. I'll ask him.
Dory.
I think he says we've stopped.
Well, of course we've stopped. Stop trying to speak, Whale. You're gonna make things worse. What is that noise? Oh no. Look what you did. The water's going down. It's going down.
Really? You sure about that?
Look, already it's half empty.
I'd say it's half full.
Stop that! It's half empty!
Was a little tougher. He either said we should go to the back of the throat, or he wants a root beer float.
Of course he wants us to go there! That's eating us! How do I taste, Moby? Huh? Do I taste good? You tell him I'm not interested in being lunch.
Okay. He...
Stop talking to him! What is going on?
I'll check! Whoa.
No! No more way! You can't speak well!
Yes, I can!
No, you can't! You think you can do these things, but you can't, Nemo!
I don't!
This is Robert Velarde, author of The Wisdom of Pixar. My favorite Pixar scene is in Finding Nemo when Marlin and Dory are inside the whale. There's a great dialogue going on there where Dory tells Marlin it's time to let go. Everything's going to be all right, and Marlin isn't so sure. How do you know? How do you know something bad isn't going to happen? And Marlin literally has to take a leap of faith. I think it's a great lesson there, especially for parents. At some point, we have to let go and trust we've done the best we can with our children as they make their own way in the world.
Hi, this is Derek Wayne from Santa Monica, California. I'm going to have to go with The Incredibles. It's still my favorite, and my favorite scene from that movie is Missile Lock, which I understand from the comments that it might have been cut were it not for John Lasseter saving the scene. My favorite part about it is Holly Hunter's voice acting, which is so incredibly emotionally moving. So yeah, that's my favorite scene.
India Golf 909er transmitting in the blind guard. Disengage, repeat, disengage!
Too late.
15 years too late.
Friendly at 20 miles south, southwest of your position. Angels 10 track east. Disengage. Over. Bye. You have to put a force field around the plane.
But you said we weren't supposed to use our powers.
I know what I said. Listen to what I'm saying now. Disengage. Repeat. Disengage.
Mom?
Violet! Mayday, mayday! India Golf 909er is buddy spiked! Abort, abort! There are children aboard!
Say again, there are children aboard this...
No!
Put a field around us now!
I've never done one that big
before! Violet, before. Do it now! Abort, abort, abort! Abort, abort, abort!
Hello, this is William Jardine from A113animation.com, and my favourite all-time Pixar scene isn't for any really profound reason, and it's for nothing more than I absolutely adore it, and it's the first 5 or so minutes of Toy Story 2, with Buzz zapping around in space, fighting evil Emperor Zurg and his robot minions on this kind of desolate wreck of a planet, right out in the middle of the Gamma Quadrant, and it has fueled my lifelong love of sci-fi. For as long as I can remember, Toy Story 2 has been my favourite film of any sort, Pixar of animation of any sort whatsoever, and I know that's a sentiment that Derek echoes, and this, for me, was the best possible way they could have started it off. Every time I watch this, I've just got a big, cheesy, childlike smile on my face. Toy Story 2 is an absolutely magnificent film, and this, for me, is one of the many reasons why.
All right, well, Greg, we're at the number one, and that's pretty exciting. And you know, I'm actually, I don't know, my number one scene, it is my number one, but I'm sort of, I don't know, I'm like. I'm grappling with just this conflict with this list of mine that, like, it doesn't feel like it captures everything. I couldn't cram them all in five, but I do think that this one scene is just so special and so well done. I think it's maybe the best scene that Pixar has ever done. And it comes from Up. It's the married life sequence, again, Michael Giacchino's score is what really makes that that much greater. But I just love the way that the storytelling comes visually. It's you know, another silent movie practically, and you have the great music, you got the great story. And you have the other thing I love about it is that in a short period of time, in about 5 minutes, it tells such a big story. You know, it is so just storytelling wise. And for so many reasons, I think that the married life scene has got to be the best Pixar scene. I will say that right now.
I cannot argue with you, sir, and I completely understand why you would choose that. And I kind of figured you might choose it, so I went another direction.
All right. Wow. So did we have any overlap?
None.
Wow, Greg, this is fantastic. We did it. I feel great about this.
That's pretty cool. And listener, I asked Derek to share his list with me like a couple days ago, and he said, no, let's just see if we can do this and be surprised by each other's lists. And I'm glad that you said that, because here we are, and we have no overlap. So
yeah,
I think
you
can probably guess what my number one is and what movie it's from.
I can definitely guess the movie. I don't know what other scene. If it's not the Define Dancing scene, I think the movie is WALL-E, though. Am I right?
It's definitely WALL-E, and as Film Spotting would say, this should be in my penalty box. It should probably be worse than that. It should probably be what's their term for
the Pantheon?
Yeah, the Pantheon that they just can't talk about anymore. So I jokingly thought, well, can I just have the first 20 minutes? And then I said, well, okay, no, that's not going to fly. That'd be cheating. So for me, definitely without question, my favorite Pixar scene, and this was not even close. It's the scene in the first, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes of the film, after WALL-E's done his work for the day. He comes home and he puts his lunch pail away, and he kind of glides by the television, and then he kind of stops and kind of rolls back, and he sees the "It Only Takes a Moment" scene on the screen, and he kind of hits the record button, and he kind of puts his little metal hands together, kind of, you know, mocking or mimicking the holding of the hands, and just the way he's looking at the screen and what he's longing for, this relationship, this companion, this somebody that he can connect with. It's just, for me, it's the scene. And it's the first thing that popped into my head, and there was no contest. It was my number one scene.
Oh, man. Greg, I can't argue with you on that one either. That really is. And I like the scene you chose because you could really take, anything from especially that first segment when it's just so – there's just something so original about that sequence on Earth in the beginning of WALL-E. Combining this, Hello, Dolly is like a pretty popular musical, but it's sort of not. I mean, it's not like – it's like just this random musical, and incorporating it into, this sci-fi with no humans. It's just some of the most original storytelling work. And you know what? This really came clear to me when I was watching the film, but also when I was just watching Oblivion, the Tom Cruise movie. I mean, that movie rips on every single, it basically is a mashup of every sci-fi movie. I don't know if you've seen it, Greg, but that's really, when I was watching that film is another moment when I was realizing how unique and original WALL-E is as a sci-fi. I mean, it is, it's one of the great sci-fi films, not just one of the great Pixar films.
Totally agree. And I love it. I just love the fact that he kind of does a whoa and kind of backs up. And I'm thinking, he's probably seen that scene a zillion times, but for him, it's like the first. And so he hits the record button and just the look of wonder on his face and just knowing what he wants in life. And yep. It's, I just love it.
Yep. Oh, I can't argue with you. Well, I love all 10 of the scenes that we chose and happy to say that some of my honorable mentions were able to get cut off from just going through our list. But any honorable mentions that you wanted to bring up, Greg, that didn't quite make the list?
Well, definitely the Married Life montage was in my honorable mention list. Dory speaking whale and Finding Nemo was in my...
That's a great one. Yeah, that's great.
My honorables. And then also the kiss at the end of WALL-E would be on my list as well.
Sure.
And then I love the scene in Up where Russell meets Kevin and then kind of like he comes out of the woods and interacts with Mr. Fredrickson. And just it's so funny. And there's just all these gags going on and just the way Kevin reacts. And it's, I just love it. And so that would be the other one that I would want to mention.
Yeah, oh, those are all great. Well, for me, honorable mentions, I'll just list a few of these. One short film that did almost make my list was Day and Night, Teddy Newton's short, because that scene when – it's such a visually interesting film. And then that scene when the day character and the night character meet in the middle when the sun is sort of in, rising and setting and they swap positions is a beautiful sequence. I love that. And another scene that I think is really heartwarming, really powerful, is probably a better word than heartwarming. But when Elastigirl, when Mrs. Incredible is talking to Violet, and it's what I love about it is it's this quiet scene. She's just it's a superhero movie, but she's just in that scene. She's just a mom talking to her daughter, helping her with confidence. And I love that scene.
That's a great one. Yeah, for sure. I feel like. With all the people calling in and with our lists, practically every Pixar film is mentioned. I mean, I guess with the exception of the Cars movies and maybe the original Toy Story and Brave. Am I wrong? Did everything else get mentioned?
Yeah. So I'm surprised that Toy Story, the first one didn't, I mean, you could pick a lot of scenes from Toy Story, I guess. I don't know. Do you have any theories as to why that one didn't make any of the list, Greg?
I don't know. I mean, we did have one mention of Bug's Life, but I just think that it's just pretty easy in human nature to kind of skip past the early stuff and
yeah.
Think of something you like better from a sequel. But I mean, if this was 1999, I think obviously we'd be talking about the original Toy Story and some of those amazing scenes in that movie.
Well, yeah. And I mean, Toy Story, I think, has some of the scenes that are just as far as animation history goes, super, super important. You know, the To Infinity and Beyond sequence is one of the all time great scenes. And so that could have easily made my list. These films are great. And I do love how many of the Pixar canon we were able to draw from. I'm going to throw in a couple more honorable mentions for my list, Greg. I also really loved – oh, one honorable mention was the staff meeting scene from Toy Story. That almost made my list just because it's so – I don't know, so funny that you have these toys so acting like just like worker adults, you know, in children's rooms, they have staff meetings. I just think that's really funny. I also thought that from A Bug's Life, that having the bloopers was a funny thing to do. And they, of course, repeated that again with Toy Story 2. And then by Monsters, Inc., it was sort of getting a little tired. And so they had other things that they started doing after that. But that idea of having bloopers in an animated film, it was just a really funny thing. Yeah, I also loved the first date in WALL-E. I'm not going to list the rest of these scenes. If people want to tweet at me or something to drag the other ones out of me, I'll relent. But all in all, even though it was a painful experience for me making this list, it was very fun to reflect on it. And reflect on why, you know, this is why I love Pixar. You know, it's these great movies, and the fact that they keep making them is just so, so exciting. So, did you have any other final thoughts, Greg?
No, but I agree with you. I mean, just getting the brain going and thinking about these films and these scenes, and it got me excited about Pixar again. And it's always nice because usually we're talking about the newest movie or what's coming or speculating. And so to be able to kind of sit back and revisit some of the older films again is fun. I love doing the top fives. It works. And I mean, obviously yep. It works. A lot of podcasts do it. And so I'm up to doing future top fives on various topics. I think it's a lot of fun and getting listener involved.
No, it really is fun. And it was really fun, listeners, to hear from you and to hear from past people that have been on the show. It really just reminded me how lucky I've been to work with all you people and have all the great support from all of you. Thank you for listening to the Pixar podcast, putting up with the momentary pauses when my student life sort of gets in the way of my real passion, which is this podcast. But it's really, really fun to do the show. And I as Colin mentioned, you know, here's to 200.
Definitely. Thank you, Derek. Thank you for all your hard work and editing and recording and, you know, planning all these things out. And it's great. And I think everybody appreciates it. And I appreciate you. And congrats on 100. And it's been fun. And yeah, like I say, here's to more.
Well, thanks, man. So a little preview, listeners. Now we're really going to get into the clips or the presentations and stuff from our Pixar trip. So starting next week, we're just going to start with the home run here, Greg. And next week, I'm going to release the roundtable interview with Monsters University director Dan Scanlon. And then after that, the week after, we're going to hear from the producer Corey Ray. And then you can check the website for other things. But week after week, you're just going to get these things. And I've sort of timed them on weeks when I think will be appropriate for, like, for example, the Dan and the Corey interviews don't really give a lot of spoilers or anything like that. You don't really need to have seen the film to really get it. Of course, if you're avoiding all content like I normally do, you know, hold them until you see Monsters University. But I think the rest of them will be sort of better to listen to them after you've seen the film. So that's how we're going to do that. And I'm really excited to share that with you. We also have some plans for new interviews in the future, in the near future too. So the time while I'm interning at Radiolab in New York City, I'm still going to be doing this every week. And there won't be breaks because I've got them all planned and they're ready to go. And so you can count on me, listeners. I promise I won't leave you. Any other quick things you're excited about in the future, Greg? In these coming weeks, not just of the podcast, but just Pixar and things in general?
Yeah, we've got The Art of Monsters U book is out, and hopefully we'll be talking about that at some point. And we've got, obviously, the countdown to the movie and The Blue Umbrella again. Talking about that in the next couple of weeks will be good. So that's, I think listeners are really going to dig that short. So there's going to be plenty to talk about, and really excited for the next, next bunch of episodes.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, as always, you can check us out. You can listen to all our episodes by going to thepixarpodcast.com or find us in iTunes or Stitcher. And thank you again for listening. We'll see you here next week with episode 101. We're in the three digits now. I can't believe it. The day has finally come. It's very exciting. All right. Well, thanks, Greg. Thanks for this great conversation. Always appreciate what you do for the show. Just couldn't do it without you. So thanks again. And listeners, we'll see you next week. You're now caught up on not only your Pixar news, but also your Pixar podcast news. And so you can get back to the rest of your life.
Keep watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
Whew. It's got this kind of burning, melty. It's not really a smoky taste. It's a certain. Oh, it's kind of like a. It's kind of like a boom sap kind of taste. Don't you think? What would you call that flavor?
Lightning.
Don't look at the light.
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you.
Gone! It's all gone. All of it's gone. Bye-bye. Who's here?
Thank you for listening to the Pixar Podcast.
All right. Well, that went great, Greg. Thanks a lot.
That was fun, man. I like I said, I really enjoyed, and I can't believe we had no overlap. That was awesome. And just most of the call-ins, there's just so much to choose from. There was like so little overlap. Someone will go, I want to talk about movie X, and I'd be like, oh, they're going to steal my, and they're like, they went a different direction. And so yeah. It was really cool.
No, I agree too. It just goes to show how personal these films can be. You know, it hits different people in different ways. And yeah, it's really, really fun. Really, really glad with how it turned out.